Hi everyone, and welcome to the Business of Customer Love podcast, brought to you by Mention Me. I'm your host Simeon Atkins, and thanks for joining us today. Growing your brand through customer love might seem like an idea that belongs in the company cafe rather than the boardroom. But identifying, growing, and activating a base of loyal fans is serious business, and the results of harnessing customer advocacy can be truly transformational for both your company and your customers. We gather experts from across the space to shine a light on how you can unleash a virtuous cycle of sustainable organic growth where your best customers keep coming back and bringing their friends too. So let's get into today's episode. So I'm excited to be joined today by Sam Phillips-Lord. Sam is the Senior Customer Insights Manager at Hastings Direct and has previously held customer experience roles at BT, Experian and Eon. Sam, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Simeon. Lovely to be here.
So you're here today to talk us through the Voice of Customer program you set up at Hastings and how you've been able to make customer insights more actionable and meaningful to the business. Before we get into that, though, do you want to give a quick introduction to our listeners?
Sure. I'm Sam. Simeon's already done that bit. I love data and insight and customers. I'm not very corporate. I do what I do because I genuinely believe that doing the right things for customers results in doing the right things for business. And I, wherever I've worked, I've tried to preach, maybe not preach, but share that message and get the real voice of customer out to the business in a way that's really engaging, fun, and informative.
Sounds to me like you're in the right place then. You love customers and you love data. You're probably on the right show.
Yes, I think I am.
Now, as tradition on the show, to get things kicked off, I'd love for you to share a time recently where, as a consumer, you experienced customer love firsthand and really what impact that had on you as a consumer as well.
Yes. It will be no surprise looking at me that I quite enjoy food. We have a restaurant near us called Hickory's, which is a wonderful American smokehouse restaurant. And it's a favourite of the family. One of the reasons it's a favourite of the family is because the experience is really good. Me and my wife have very differing opinions on experience. She loves it when people are kind, talk to you, ask you about your day. I just want to sit down, eat my dinner and go. But I don't mind a little bit. But what really, really worked and was amazing a recent time that we went was there's two relatively close together, one in Nottingham, one in Derby. My son went to the one in Nottingham with his mum and I think for his birthday, and they made milkshakes behind the bar. Brilliant. Wonderful. He loved it. Spoke about the experience all the time. We went to the Derby one and the guy working there was at the Nottingham one when Eric went and remembered him from that time. And yeah, amazing, right? It's not like he's got three arms or anything really special about him. and said, we need to make it as good as last time. So let's go and make a milkshake. And he got to make a milkshake again. And little things like that really changed that from just being we've been to have some really nice food, we could be anywhere, to that was really, really good. We really felt valued, loved, and we're going to keep going back there because the food's great, the service is great, they're really kind and friendly, and it's lovely.
I feel like if you have a photographic memory, you're in a good position to be in customer experience. You've got a good opportunity because if you can remember things like that, I mean, firstly, that's very impressive. I don't know what the gap was between the two visits, but regardless, I think that's
quite a while. Yeah,
that's very impressive. But no, and you're right. It's the simple touches like that can make all the difference. I think you're right. We've had a few examples on the show where family and children have kind of been brought into that experience, and I always feel that kind of hits home with people just that little bit more as well. If you can kind of treat that extended family in such a way rather than just kind of like yourself as a consumer, I think that always goes a long way.
Yeah, absolutely. Lots easier to do in a fun service industry, right? Personalization is always often a big thing in CX, right? So, yeah. But much easier to do than renewing your car insurance with personalization, right?
That's right. Absolutely. Now, this term customer love, I think, means different things to different people. And as someone that's worked in the customer experience space for a long time and worked for some really well-known household names, I'd love to kind of get a definition from you of how you would define customer love.
Ooh. I don't know if this is a test, Simeon.
You mean you didn't study?
Customer love. So customer love to me means doing the right thing by your customer. That might be really wishy-washy and really broad, but customers aren't one homogenous group that require the same thing, regardless of what it is you are producing, servicing, serving, whatever. Each person is an individual, and understanding what that person wants at that particular time is really, really key. So I said it before, right? I want, typically, I want to be able to interact digitally with service providers. I want to be able to do what I want to do really easily online without talking to a person, because it does nothing for me. Pretty competent at using a computer. My grandma will want to talk to somebody. My grandma will want to talk to somebody about the weather before she talks to them about closing down her bank account or whatever it is. And it's recognizing that different people want different things, giving the person in front of you what they want at that point and not making them do the things that you want as a business because you think that that's the right thing. Yeah.
It's interesting because we were talking off air about some experience you've had at other businesses and how that actually shaped your career path as well. I think you've worked at businesses where that's certainly not been in the forefront of their minds. And that's kind of made it, I guess, from what you were telling me, you kind of fell into one of your earlier roles, didn't really know a lot about it. And from your experience there with how the business was thinking about and treating their customers, that kind of forged the career path that you've taken today.
Yeah, absolutely. There's been a couple of roles that I've had that have really cemented what I do now. So I've done a lot of data and insight roles and thought I'll customer data, customer insight, and it was all about customer. And I really enjoyed it. But one of the things that I fell down on was the commercial aspect of it. And not just saying to people, go do this because it's really good for customers. People were like, yeah, fine. Don't really care. I want more customers. So then I did a role that was all about the commercial aspect, getting more customers, get more customers, get more customers. And I did not enjoy that. It just didn't fit right with me. But what it did do was help me go, okay, so because you want more customers, I know that experience matters. And throughout the work that I've done and the things that I've been involved in, I've proven that experience matters and can demonstrate that with it gives you more customers. So it helped me understand that commercial stuff is really, really relevant and really valuable. And that's what kind of sprung me on to the next step. But now I can do that with a customer angle and say, and this is why it's good for the business.
Yeah, really, really interesting. And obviously, eventually, what that's led you to is your role at Hastings at the moment. And I know that one of the projects that you've been involved with recently is setting up this Voice of Customer program. I'd love if you could share with us a little bit more about that. You know, what led you to set it up in the first place, how you kind of put it together, and then we'll start to touch on some of the results that it's led to as well.
Sure. So I didn't actually set it up, but we've transformed it, right? So a bit like other places I've worked as well, there's been a VOC program, Voice of Customer program, for a number of years. When I joined, it was going. We were reporting NPS as the metric of choice. How likely are customers to recommend us? It was being reported on fine. What we've transformed that to now is we're still doing it, still doing roughly the same kind of thing as we were doing before, but in a bit more of a governed, structured way that allows us to better tell the business why scores are what scores are. So not just your area of the business is getting a 50. Great. Last month it was 49. Cool. We're able to say it's 50 now. It was 49 because customers are talking about these things and they're talking more positively about these things in these areas. Here's all your feedback. Some of this stuff needs actioning, so go talk to your customers and fix them. And here's all the great stuff that you can talk to your colleagues about to say, you're doing really, really well, actually. Keep doing what you're doing because customers love it when you do that stuff. And the it's the insurance industry. Nobody, I imagine, very, very few people want to talk to their insurance company. Even fewer people want to buy insurance. But it's a necessity. And my view is let's make sure that we are doing the best thing that we can for the customers that need to talk to us and interact with us. And price, I'm sure, is a massive, massive driving factor for everybody when they choose their insurance provider. I know it is for me. And the general consensus was always price matters more than anything else in the world. It doesn't matter what experience you give a customer, as long as the price is cheap, it's fine. I was able to do a bit of work a few years ago that said price absolutely matters. Yes, it does. We know that because we're a pricing-led industry. But even normalizing for price, we have been able to prove that giving a good experience actually does make customers want to stay with us, even if we cost a little bit more than competitors. And that bit of insight sounds really obvious, right? So people who promote us, who are promoters in NPS, are more likely to stay with you. It's kind of a given. But proving that and putting that with a pounds and pence number on it and a numbers of customers and retention proportions really helps the business understand that actually this matters. So let's go do more of the good stuff that customers want and let's really chase that customer experience and get that customer experience better so that our customers get a better experience. And ultimately, the reason why we're here, so the reason why I'm here is to do that customer bit, but ultimately the reason why the business exists, any business exists, most businesses exist, is to make money for shareholders. And whilst that doesn't sit comfortably with me, I can do my bit by doing the bit that works for me and sharing that with the business so that other people can do the other bits that they need to do.
And I guess in price-led industries like insurance, there's only so far you can go down, right? But there's only so far that you can, only so cheap you can go. And so I suppose you then need to be thinking about, well, what else can I be doing to get customers in? Like if I'm on par with like two or three other companies in terms of price and we literally can't go down any further, well, what else are we going to do? Not saying that customer experience should be a secondary thought, but I think that the point is, as you said, price is always going to be important, but like what else are you doing? I also think as well, like my opinion with insurance and the more insurance companies I speak to as well, it kind of solidifies it, is that I feel it's like an industry that's really ripe for customer experience. I don't think it's necessarily one that always comes with a great customer experience reputation. But I think actually a lot of the time we're interacting with insurance companies, it's probably not a great scenario. Like something bad has probably happened. And so that's where you really do need a good customer experience, speaking to someone that knows what they're talking about, is empathetic and all those kind of things. Yeah. And I think that it's, you've got such a great opportunity in this industry to elevate yourself above the competition with a good customer experience.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And it's helping the business understand that, right? So I think deep down, we all know that. If we really put ourselves in customers' shoes, we are all customers as well. We're all customers. We know the kind of experience we'd want. What I've seen happen, not necessarily at Hastings, but over the years, is people get really into the business and they see the business from inside. And with customer feedback, if a customer says, I don't like the way this thing is done, doing that inside view, you go, well, it's done because of these things. Mm-hmm. And yes, that might be true, but the customers don't like that. They're like, oh, but we can't change it. It's like, but we could change it. Everything is changeable, is my view and philosophy, I think. Prove me wrong. Everything is changeable. And what I would like to do with customer insight, and why I think it's really important to have customer insight and customer feedback, is to help particularly people who've been in jobs and companies for years and years. They have a really good understanding of like the processes, the systems that happen, and they become a bit blinded to the experience that gives customers. So let's bring that and paint that picture and help people understand that actually things can be different and we can give good experiences, better experiences. They don't have to be wow, they don't have to be amazing, but let's set expectations. If this thing isn't possible, let's tell customers this thing isn't possible. And mm-hmm. It's kind of an expectation thing as well, isn't it? I think that's a lot of customer experiences. Set your expectations, deliver to those expectations. You don't even need to go above those expectations. Just deliver to those expectations.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point, actually. And another guest was talking about this a while ago. So, for example, if you're on hold with a call center and they tell you that you'll be spoken to in 5 minutes, yeah. It's like, okay, well, I've got that expectation. It's going to be 5 minutes. If they weren't to say anything and you're waiting for 5 minutes, as a consumer, that then becomes really frustrating because you've got no idea what the expectations are. So I think you're right. That is a really important building block of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And for a business, and where I like to, let's use that example, where I like to really add value is go for things like that. What is the length of time a customer can be waiting on the phone? I've worked in contact centers for many, many years. What's the point where customers go, I've had enough. I've had enough. I'm going to hang up, or I'll wait. And actually, it doesn't matter what happens at the end, what happens on the call. I'm already going to be really annoyed. I'm going to be a detractor. What's that point? Because there's always a point, and it depends what it is, what you do with it. And then I can share that information with the people that matter and go, actually, 6 minutes. If customers wait longer than 6 minutes, it doesn't matter what the outcome of the call is. Customers are always going to be really annoyed, and they're going to be loads less likely to renew with us. Then that opens up the doors to go, cool, we could recruit more people and make sure every call is answered within 6 minutes. What's that cost? What's the benefit? Or what are people calling for? Let's get rid of that demand by doing these things. And then it opens up and feeds into all of those business decisions. And I think that's the way that VOC customer insight needs to go, is to be a critical part of those decisions and the decision-making process in businesses for what do we do next, what's going to have the impact, and just to be able to make those really well-informed decisions.
And I'd like to go into that in a little bit more detail with you, actually, sort of like moving sort of the next step with the Voice of Customer program that you have. I'd like if you could give us maybe an idea of how you're making these customer insights, like NPS you were talking about there, which is an important one for you guys, more actionable and more meaningful to the business.
Sure. One of the big things that I believe in, that actually until recently I hadn't done really well in my current role. I was reflecting on it as I was talking to you last time, actually. In a previous role, I had some principles for everything that I did. Now, I'm a big fan of reporting. So, and I see a lot of articles that are like, reporting is dead, insights what matters. I don't believe in that. I think it's fundamentally wrong. I think reporting is the bedrock and the foundation for good insight. With regular reporting, you can see what's happening, see what's changing, and then delve into that and understand the insight. So I think that's reporting is a fundamental part of VOC and insight. But I had a set of principles. One of the principles was, we'll never report just a score. We will always share insight, and or we'll always share customer feedback that links to that score. And I've recently reinvigorated that in the work that I do. So producing packs for board and exec to say, here's what performance is like from a customer perspective. Scores are these. This is the things that customers are talking about. They're saying it's good or bad or ugly. And here's a representative comment. And just that little bit of addition of the comment brings it to life and paints the picture and says, this is what a customer has actually said. Mm. So that you can understand that in a little bit more, not in my words, but in a customer's words. So that's one thing. The other thing is sharing that broadly and sharing that widely and being involved in the changes and the decisions that are being made. So one of the things recently at work was a change to how we talk to customers in their renewing process. So we have to say some things regulatory wise. We want to say some things as a business and in the way that the business needs to. We made some changes to that to try and make it better for customers, make it better for our colleagues, and to help understand the impact. So there's loads of like operational and commercial impacts of that. Are customers more likely to renew with this new world? Are we spending less time on the phone, less follow-up action, all of that good stuff? What do customers actually think about it? That was part of the decision because of the program that we have and because of the work that we do. We're able to say those customers using this new process are as happy or happier than the ones using the old process. So we're good to go from a customer perspective. Then it becomes a case of your commercials and your operational metrics to help steer that decision. But it's getting that customer feedback in there as part of the decision-making process so that it's in there.
I think that sentiment, the customer sentiment, is like really powerful. I was speaking to another guest a while ago who headed up customer experience at a big retailer, and she was saying that, you know, if they were, for example, running out of baby food, I think she gave that as an example, like formula, and you know, that could be quite easily overlooked. But by adding sentiment from parents around the impact of that, the business then turned around and were like, God, we're actually like preventing parents from being able to feed their babies. Like, obviously that's a bit dramatic, but like the point is it's then making it more human and more real rather than just like, okay, we're out of stock. It's like, well, what is the actual impact to consumers with that?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's a really key point. I was talking to somebody else earlier today about it doesn't matter whether you're dealing with a B2C or a B2B kind of relationship or customer. We're dealing with humans. Humans dealing with humans. And let's make sure that people don't forget that. It's not, NPS isn't just a number. Another thing that I will get a bit preachy about is that you should never have a target, an NPS target. We should never say we're going to improve NPS by 3 points. That's not a target. Because NPS is the outcome of all of the experiences that a customer goes through, or CSAT or EASE, whatever. It's the things that make up NPS that we need to target and look at. And NPS helps us put the human element back into it so that we can say how that impacts other humans. I see an article there. I don't know.
There's definitely potential, I think. We'll chat about it off air. Get something together. One of the things we were talking off air about actually was the value of brand advocates and the importance of prioritizing not just your biggest spenders, but actually the customers that are going out there and spreading the word about your brand and bringing in their friends and family through their referrals. Why do you think that businesses should be prioritizing their biggest advocates as well as their biggest spenders? I know that you told me about a really good stat that you got from your promoters, and I'd love you just kind of like share that insight and more broadly why brands should be looking at their biggest fans as well as their spenders.
Yeah, so I think it's common in many industries that retention is cheaper than getting new business, and that's a commercial thing. I hate commercial things, but it is a commercial thing, and it's pretty common, I think, across most industries. So focusing on the experience you give your current customers has a massive impact on retention. If a customer is going to retain, buy more, share their story, cost less to serve, they're the ones that you really want. the stuff that I spoke about earlier, to say promoters are more likely to, if someone's had a, say, change their car through their policy or moved house and had to change their insurance through that, that experience has a really high correlation to whether they renew or not. So if they're a promoter for that experience, they're twice as likely to renew as if they were a detractor in that experience. Back when I was at Eon, we did some work where we had a lot of promoters because we were pretty good. As we do at Hastings, we have loads of promoters. Our NPS is really, really good. We weren't just focusing on closing the loop. Mostly that's talked about with detractors. So how do you turn your detractors into promoters? But actually, there's an equal relevance on promoters. And how do you help those promoters recommend you? And things like, if you get promoters, yes, we get tens, everybody's happy. You can share that with the person they spoke to or digital team if they did something digitally, whatever. But actually, they've told us that they're going to recommend us. So we all know that not every promoter does. So let's help them. Let's give them an incentive to recommend us. Drop them an email. Reply to their survey feedback where they've given us a 10 and say, thanks for that. Remember, you said you'd recommend us. Go and recommend us. Maybe not in those words, but give them the incentive to recommend you. And that will keep them longer. You'll get more new business and everybody's happy.
I think you're right. There's so much potential with those promoters. I think a lot of brands may be understandably focused on the detractors and how they can make them promoters. But then when you have those promoters, there's so much that you can do to, you know, drive that relationship forward and ultimately help grow the business.
Yeah.
Do you have any examples of, you mentioned there one around encouraging them to refer. Have you got any other examples of what you've done with that cohort of promoters to either make sure they do end up going to promote, or just more sort of like broadly how you've nurtured those promoters?
From previous companies, yes. So back in old world, it was that kind of next best action. If customers promote us, what are we going to do with them? And it was as simple as loads of work in the background, as often these things take, right? But customers give us tens, nines in NPS world, and we say, thank you very much. And even doing that, just saying thanks for your feedback, we really value it, helps customers appreciate and know that you're reading their feedback, because a lot of the time, customers don't think their feedback is read, reacted to, or actioned on. And just telling customers that you do something with it helps them realize that you actually take them seriously. And it's as simple as that, letting them know that you do things. That's as far as my experience with that's gone. Some of the things that I want to do, I want to get customer stories on our websites, right? So you said this in your feedback, we've done this. You said we're really good. Go tell your neighbors and we'll give you all 50 quid off your insurance, whatever. But I think there's a massive opportunity in the customer insight VOC world to do more of that stuff. And to your point, nurture those promoters more. And if you do surveys, multiple surveys to the same customers, if they've been promoters and they suddenly drop to a detractor or a passive or whatever, how do you recognize those and how do you deal with that in a way that's going to recover them, really? It might be an early warning sign for retention and could really drive some value. I haven't thought of that before, but I like it.
Hope you're taking notes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sam, we've covered some brilliant ground today. The final thing that I wanted to cover with you was, for people listening that are in businesses that are very kind of stuck in their ways in terms of tried and tested acquisition channels like Meta and Google, etc., do you have any advice on how they can start to influence the CMO or other senior executives around potentially reallocating budget or creating budget for maybe less tried and tested channels like referral and advocacy and customer experience programs more broadly?
Yes. I'm going to say prove the value, which sounds obvious and is massively difficult in practice, but it doesn't take a lot to prove the value. And you can do things on small cohorts of customers to say, let's give this a go. Do it on 5 or 10 customers. Give it a go. Get somebody on board who is also invested in improving something, whether that's retention or new business or upsell or whatever it might be, and say, got an idea. And then prove the value, demonstrate the value, sell the value, and do that in conjunction with others. I'm a massive collaborator. Customer experience, I don't think, should be a particular department. I mean, it might be, but everyone is involved in customer experience, whether they think they are or not. And getting other people involved to help bring that story to life, bring more of the business with it, help sell it to others, higher ups, people holding the purse strings, to be able to allocate more funds to the right places.
Love that. Sam, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Thank you
Likewise.
So much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to the Business of Customer Love podcast, hosted by Mention Me. Thanks for tuning in, and be sure to join us next time, where we'll be speaking to some more amazing guests about how you can harness the power of customer love. See you again soon.